Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is episode number 7, and I am Libya, your host, and this week we have two new guests. Go ahead and introduce yourselves.
Ladies. Hey, this is Ronnie from Las Vegas.
And this is Tom from La Crescenta, California.
And how long have you guys known each other?
I was 17. I think Ronnie was too, right?
Yes, 17.
Back in the days.
That's right. How can we be that old?
We're not. Time warp. We have our own TARDIS.
Exactly, yes.
All right. And this week in the news, I've got a couple items. The first is the buzz around Hollywood right now is that there's some pilots coming out, and J.J. Abrams' pilot has – people have just looked at the rough cut, and his pilot is called The Undercovers, and it's about a married couple who works for the CIA. And apparently the rough cut looks gorgeous. They said the leads are great looking, and, you know, J.J. Abrams, as you know, does a really good job with the pilot. So at least we know the pilot's going to be good. I have J.J. Abrams fright in that. I don't like the fact that he starts off a show with a great idea. He hangs around for the first season, then he gets bored. And so the show is usually pretty good for the first season, and then it goes downhill, but... we'll see.
I don't think he gets bored. People just throw money at him to move on to something else.
I want my executive producer to be committed. I want him to stay with my show. The next piece of news I have is that Bruce Boxleitner is starring in a movie, made for sci-fi movie, called 51. Gosh. Yes, exactly my reaction. I was like, oh God, a sci-fi movie.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it's a good thing he gets money.
Somebody needs to pay their mortgage.
Yeah, so it's a good thing he's getting some money, but I'm not holding out hopes that the movie's going to be fantastic or anything. The plot is that a bunch of reporters get trapped on a military base with an alien. That has potential to really suck. But I like Bruce Boxleitner, so I'll probably at least watch the first 10 minutes. And the last thing I have is that Parenthood got renewed for season 2. And you guys have any news?
I have one piece. Yesterday, Michael Osiello from Entertainment Weekly reported that a season 4 for Chuck is looking a lot better than it was earlier this week. I'm not sure exactly what changed because it's been off the air for a couple of weeks before the next batch of new episodes, but I'm glad. I've really enjoyed Chuck, and I'm surprised how many people were hating on Brandon Routh's character before he went to the dark side.
Oh, I was hating him. I mean, I couldn't stand him. I thought he was, like, made out of cardboard.
I don't think he's that bad of an actor.
I really do. I really do.
He wasn't the worst thing about Superman Returns.
No, but the plot had problems, but my problem with him on Chuck is he had no range, emotional range. And, I mean, that's fine for Casey's character because that's part of his character, and he has humor that he adds to it. So even when Casey is being stoic, he's got a little smirk, does a little growl. He's got layers to his character. And my problem with Shaw, thank you, is that he was so straight-laced, there was nothing else.
But
he was one note.
Wasn't he supposed to be the AJ squared, you know, square-jawed prototypical hero?
Yeah, he was, but give me a little... I mean, that's still one note. I mean, you got to have something going on underneath that. You got to have a couple of layers. You got to have something going on behind your eyes.
Yeah.
And I never felt like he had anything going on behind his eyes, and so I was really bored with his character. And I didn't believe that Sarah... I mean, granted, he's a good-looking guy, so sure... Sarah might find him attractive, but I didn't really believe that she would really date him.
Well, the thing on a show like that is you've got to keep the leads apart. So you bring in Kristen Kreuk.
Well, at least she was interesting. Like, I actually
Is it my imagination, or has she taken acting lessons in Smallville?
I don't know, but she was really good in Chuck. And I actually wanted Chuck and her to get to stay together for a while. I had no problem with them as a couple. I really liked them together. But Shaw and Sarah, I really didn't.
Yeah. Well, I don't disagree with what you're saying about Ralph, but I think he gets the raw end. I don't know.
He has to earn it. So far, he hasn't done anything that impressed me. So, all right. any other news as we start ranting?
I'm telling you, I have just a little bit. Like, according to TV Guide, since the end of the Olympics, Castle's ratings as of April 4th have shot up 53%, which I like to hear, because I think Nathan Fillion finally deserves a show that will stick.
they got the pickup for season 3 pretty early.
Yeah, yeah.
And for a Nathan Fillion show, that's like a minor miracle.
That is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I really loved Castle this season. Especially, it's much better than first season, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've seen every episode. I didn't like Stanna Katic at first. She seemed like a model turned actress, and I have a couple of friends who work on the show, and evidently she was never a model. But something about their chemistry just clicked about midway through first season, and then they toned down Martha's character, and I hated her at the beginning.
Oh, the mother, right, right.
The mother-in-law. I love the daughter.
Yes.
And then second season has just clicked, and I really enjoyed the two-parter with Dana Delaney.
Oh, yeah, that was really good.
I mean, it was good to see Dana Delaney get to play something, you know, quasi-serious compared to Desperate Housewives, which is one of the many shows I've broken up with this year.
Well, I'm temporarily watching Desperate Housewives, but when I say I'm watching Desperate Housewives, I am actually watching John Barrowman on Desperate Housewives.
You're watching at Desperate Housewives.
I recorded on my TiVo, and I fast-forward until I see John Barrowman, and then I watch until he is off-screen, and then I fast-forward again. He's got these cool coffee shop scenes with this guy who works there as like a barista.
That's his son.
Right, and that's what I figured out. I was like, oh, that's his son. And he's like getting his son to come to help him come up with, because he's telling his son that, oh, this is just a novel I'm writing. So come help me come up with ideas to get how the character would get revenge. And he's actually got his son actively participating in his plot. But what was funny was one of my friends did the same thing, and she didn't realize that that guy was Barrowman, was supposed to be his character's son. And she's like, oh, he's flirting with this guy in a bar. And I was like, no. Like, he's not flirting with the guy, trust me. So that I thought that was really
amazing.
They're
not that desperate.
Let's get on with the shows. The first thing we're going to talk about this week is Castle. Since we were just talking about Castle and how great it's been doing in the ratings, what did you think about the episode this week?
It introduced Michael Trucco as a new potential love interest for Beckett. Again, we have to keep our leads apart, so we are going to bring in people to help us accomplish that. The thing I love about Castle is it's not about the mysteries. It's about the characters and their interactions.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you can usually figure out in the first 10 minutes who done it, but it's not the whodunit. It's, watch them catch them.
Well, I mean, I did like the big fight scene that she had with Michael Trucco, where they basically just wrestled with each other sweatily on the floor. And I liked Castle's reaction when the guy's like, oh, you're not dating her, are you? So she's free. He's like, oh, yeah. And then he thinks about it later. He's like, maybe I shouldn't be so stoic.
No, well, I love when they cut to the scene of him and the daughter playing poker. And they talk about bluffing and keeping a poker face.
Yeah, and that's the scene I mean. And it's like, he realized that his poker face actually was his undoing, because if he had actually reacted, then he could have been like, no, dude, she's mine. And so he spent most of the episode being quite jealous, which, is an interesting... You know that's where that's going, and you know that eventually she's going to break up with Michael Trucco's character, but...
I think he's signed for a total of 3 episodes.
So, well, I mean, he's tall, he's hot. I don't mind looking at him, so I'm fine with that. So, yay.
And the other nice thing was actually seeing an episode centered around Esposito and get more of his.
Right. Yes. Nice point. Yes.
Give the background minion something to do.
Definitely.
Yeah, he really got a good chance to shine this week, because the two of them being partners. You see their humor when they tease each other, but this was the first time you really get to see what happens when they have to come together and defend each other and back each other up, and that emotion and that brotherhood or whatever is really there. So, yeah, I really liked it this week. It was a good episode.
Definitely. Go 54th.
54th, right. All right, what about V? What do you guys think about V this week?
I stopped V after the pilot.
Okay, you're not allowed to speak right now. I don't know if we're going to let you speak for the rest of the podcast. But V was... you saw V, right, Ronnie?
Yes, I did.
This week's V was pretty good. I like the fact they introduced, like, a couple weeks ago, the whole concept of scanning the Vs and being able to tell if they had too much emotion. And if and Anna was like the baseline. I was like, the coldest person ever in the world is the baseline. And if you fell below her baseline for coldness, you were instantly incinerated. So I was
literally.
And I was just like, whoa. And it was funny because the scientist guy was like, are you sure we want to use you as a baseline? And she was like, yes. And so the tension this week was that her daughter was the last one to be tested, and she failed because she actually has feelings for the kid.
Now, so her daughter's Laura Vandervoort, or...
Is what?
The blonde chick who used to play Supergirl on Smallville.
Yes, that is her daughter. And they actually did a good job because around the eyes and the cheeks, they really do look alike. The only difference is the other girl has blonde hair. I mean, other than the blonde hair, they look very similar.
They really do.
So... her daughter does the test, totally fails it, and Joshua, who is the scientist, is part of the fifth column. He basically, you know, he had to figure out, is this a trap? Do they want to see if I let the daughter live, if she's going to join us? Or is it something we can use? Maybe we can turn her and have her join the fifth column. And so that was the conundrum. And what he did, what Joshua ended up doing was something in the middle, where he basically said, I haven't told your mother that, I told your mother that you passed. But I'm going to ask you for a favor later, and you're going to do it. So it gave him a little power and a little clout without... But later on, you know, if it is a trap, he could have said, oh, I just wanted a favor. He doesn't reveal himself as being part of the fifth column. So I thought that was pretty smart.
Very godfather-y.
The interesting thing was the scene between the mother and the daughter, where, she, you know, where the mother goes and gets one of the eggs, who are basically her brother...
Right.
Make one and smashes it because it's like, Mom, that's my brother, you know?
Well, you know, she's growing, yeah, she's growing these soldiers, and there's like thousands of them, and she's like, we have to kill anyone that's weak, including family.
See, right, but then it makes you wonder, okay, the relationship between, you know, the mother and daughter versus the mother with this army and all of her other children, you know what I mean? So why is it special with the daughter?
Well, I get the impression that she's like a queen bee, and her daughter has the potential to be a queen bee as well. So that gives her elevated status.
So the males are expendable drones?
Pretty much, because she ate the guy who impregnated her. She ate him to give nourishment to the eggs.
Great.
So yeah, I got that impression. But also what's interesting is that we found out that the FBI woman, her son, she was married. And what broke up her marriage was the fact that they did a blood test when the boy got hurt and found out that the father wasn't the father. And she's like, that's freaking impossible because I never slept with anybody else. And I'm like, that's it. That's why the V's are interested in that kid, because they did something to the mother and impregnated her. So there's something... I think there's something V-like in that kid,
The
son. That's what I'm thinking, because she, the FBI woman, she has no reason to lie at this point. So to me, that means that there's something else. The V's did something.
Something to her. Interesting, and especially because her partner was a V. You know.
Right. That's true. It's a good point. But I don't think, was her partner a V? Was that guy her partner as long as her son's been alive?
Probably.
Oh, actually, it's true. That's it.
I don't know. Well, that's a good thought, though. But that's a very good thought. That's probably it. All right.
But the whole premise for the series is the V's have been here for a while.
Right.
Very War of the Worlds-y. At least the new inferior Tom Cruise version.
All right, let's go on to Glee.
Okay.
We had a very Madonna episode this week.
I hate to be a buzzkill, but... Glee frustrates the out of me.
You bleeped yourself. Nice.
The music is amazing, and the writing is wildly inconsistent.
I watched the show for the music, and I agree with you. Like, first season. The first part of first season, the whole pregnancy and the faux pregnancy and all of that was absolutely abominable. But the singing was just so good. I mean, everything about when they're actually in Glee Club. And I love the kids in how they don't fit in with the other kids. They get Slurpees and stuff thrown in their faces. Like, all
slushies,
that stuff. Slurpees, slushies, whatever. All that stuff is really, really interesting to me. And I'm not going to argue with you that the actual story is, it's all right. But the very Madonna episode was great. They had all those Madonna songs, and Like a Prayer was fantastic, and Vogue was great. I missed the last
4 minutes thanks to the freaking American Idol overrun.
The very Madonna episode I thought was really good because it just basically had everybody participated, including Cheerios.
Sue is
like a crazy Madonna fan. I would not have guessed that. And the Vogue video, we got to see it last week, but it fit more in this week's episode. Although, it felt really random last week.
Well, last week was supposed to be a sneak peek. I didn't realize they were going to run the whole thing. But this week, they used the whole video inside the episode.
Right. It was good. I mean, I enjoyed it. And the plot that's going on right now is nowhere near as bad as what was going on in the first 13, so I'm fine.
I thought it was interesting that, they used Like a Virgin to have three star sets of star-crossed lovers with varying results.
I knew they were going to use Like a Virgin. As soon as she's like, oh, I'm ready, I was like a Virgin is calling. I didn't realize they were going to do all three of them.
Ever since Moulin Rouge, you got to find ways to use that in new and surprising ways. I probably could have brought this up in the news section. They are negotiating to do a second Madonna episode because the ratings for this one were huge.
Oh, and
surprise!
Yeah. Well, I think they should just, themed ones really work, I think. But yeah, it was a good episode. You are supposed to be telling us more about Parenthood.
I love Parenthood. And I was dubious at first because, face it, making a 1 hour dramedy based on a movie that you already made a half hour sitcom about a long time ago seems a dubious proposition. But Jason Kadams is the man. I mean, he's the guy who helped develop Friday Night Lights into the phenomenon it is, and now on DirecTV going into its fifth season. But Parenthood is quite good. They basically just took the premise of the movie, four adult children of two parents and their extended families, and, they used a different last name, but they kept the character types pretty much the same. And most people know a little bit about Parenthood because they remember that Maura Tierney was originally cast to play one of the daughters and then had to... After the pilot was shot, she found out she had breast cancer. They stopped production for a while, and then it turned out her treatment was going to take longer, so they recast the role with Lauren Graham. And Lauren Graham is amazing. It's hard to imagine Maura Tierney in the role, but she does do drama and comedy both. But Lauren Graham is just so perfect in the role. It's just a great show. It's a little reminiscent of Brothers and Sisters without the monotony of repeating dinner parties and Gone Awry and... just big angst over nothing. And just very well done. Peter Krause plays the older brother. Erica Christensen plays one of the sisters. And Dax Shepard, who I guess got his start on Jackass? Or I don't know. I've seen him in a couple of things and didn't think much of him. But those are the four siblings. Krause, Shepard, Christensen, and Graham. And they're great. And then Craig T. Nelson and Bonnie Bedelia play the patriarch and matriarch.
You are throwing those names like crazy. You're doing way better than me. I never can remember anyone's names. But I love Lauren Graham. So, and Peter Krause, I like him too. So just on those two things alone, I might have to give this show a shot. That would be a summer thing for me because I watch way too much TV as it is. So I might have to wait for the first season to end. And since we just found out it's going to get a second season.
Yep.
So that means that... Yeah, that might get added. I'll check that out.
And the last time it went head-to-head with The Good Wife on CBS, it beat The Good Wife in the 18 to 49 demos, which I think was the key factor in NBC picking it up, because it's one of their few scripted shows at 10 p.m. post Linogate. Oh, sorry, I call that Chingate, because Lino is a four-letter word in my house, so Chingate.
One thing I just wanted to add is right here, I want to put in these interviews. I know you guys have listened to some of the first couple podcasts. I had NCIS interviews that I got from the Paley. This week, I got to interview the cast of Psych.
I love that show.
Yay! And if you're not watching that show, I don't know why you're not watching that show. It's hilarious. And they're about to go and start shooting season 5. They went to the Paley first and did some interviews. And they are very charming and really funny. And I think sometimes the audio is pretty hard to hear. It's better if you watch the video. And the video is over at Wheatonopolis.com. The first interview is with Timothy Amundsen. Well, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing his name horribly. He plays Carlton Lassiter.
As the character has gone on for years, he started off kind of stoic and very serious and kind of a little mean, but as he's progressed, he's softened up a little bit. What is your favorite aspect of the character as he's changed?
Wow, that was a long time ago.
You're starting to see his sense of humor come out. Cranky's fine for a while, but that gets a little boring. I think it's boring to watch, it's boring to play. So I love how he's been able to sort of loosen up a little bit. And in the right moments, he's still, 9 times out of 10, the thickest could be, but you get to see those fringe moments where he starts to fall apart a little bit.
So if you had a chance to go into the writer's room and say, I want my character to go this direction, where would you want Lassiter to go? Where is his future in your eyes?
Well, personally, Lassiter needs a lady. Say that now. Doesn't everybody, but I think Lassiter, for God's sakes, give this man a date so he can relax. It'll make everybody happy. And people around him will be happy because he'll be happy. So that would be nice. Or even a dog. Just come on. Some companionship for the man. He goes home to this little apartment, takes his cup of noodles, sits there, watches some Cops reruns, the first 48. It's just sad. And he wants some food. Professionally? Head of Homeland Security.
All right, thank you.
Would be good.
Hi, I'm Marissa with Lassiter.com.
Hi, Maggie.
Thank you. I've got a flip cam. Oh, yeah, sweet. We can
flip
me off, too.
I'm flipping you
off. Flipping me off?
Yeah, look at your lovely. That's why you look so lovely, so it's all good.
Oh, thanks.
What about, I know you, every, at the end of every episode, we had my fun part of the show, which is Psych Out.
Right?
Where did you guys come up with that, and which one of them is your favorite?
Still standing.
Yeah.
Juliet had a rough year.
I think the I'm Too Sexy would have to be my favorite
Psych Out. Starting the finale of like season 3
was,
with her
particularly free.
Pouring her heart out to Sean. It
was nice to
show the audience a little more. I think it's finally gotten to her. I think rather than it just being like, Juliet bounces back, I think she's actually going to be feeling it.
They come about
side.
By,
yes.
They pretty much say, these are the songs that have been cleared. James will say, hey, by the way, you're doing
Mike Too Sexy. That's true, when women have James in their lives,
they do. It's the first thing to go. I just read a
particularly funny as well for me. I don't get a chance to do the monkey very often on camera, so that was nice.
So, yeah.
Did you get a chance to do that at all?
I do the monkey around the house, you know, from time to time with the kids, at parties. Depends how much I'm being paid. The monkey. No.
They need to get her. I think she almost needs almost serious love and interest.
Thank you very much.
The second interview is with Maggie Lawson. She plays Jules O'Hara.
I'm Livia from Wheatonopolis, which is a fan base site following Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon? Okay. No, go on. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Second take from that.
Yeah.
So, basically, we have added your show to our family of cultist shows, and we're very excited that you guys have come here.
That's awesome. Thank you.
So, the first question I have for you is, what is your favorite aspect of your character as you've seen your character develop over the last 4 years?
Let's see. What is my favorite? Well, I think I love that no matter what the task, she goes like 250%. Whether it's undercover, whether it's a small case, big case, love, whatever it is, she doesn't really half-ass anything. And I like that about her. I wish I could do that a little more.
Well, she's developed a lot. I mean, she was very much the rookie in first season.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, I mean, she's taking cases on her
yeah,
own.
Yeah, I think it's, like, over, you know, first season, she was very, like, by the books. You know, she was in this sea of men and sort of, like, negotiated the play and how to fit in, whatever. And I think now she's comfortable. She knows she's good. And she can take control a little bit more, but she can also relax and let her hair down a little more. And I think season 5 will probably see some of that. Mostly because she went through such a traumatic experience in the finale. Yeah, so she's coming from a dark place this year.
That's also what I was going to ask is, the show's primarily been a comedy, but recently, especially in the finales, they've gotten a bit darker. Like, how do you feel about that, the comedy versus the drama and
I think
darkness?
You have to have that on some level. Our show is very, like, sunny and bright, and, you know, and I love that, and it's, you know, a lot of comedy and a lot of hijinks, whatever. And then to show for us as actors, for, you know, the writers, for just the evolution of the show, I think you have to have that other side as well for the payoff. Either way, I think you have to have the funny to pay off the dark, and you have to have the dark to pay off the funny. So I like that we have all of that season 4 at some point.
What about your relationship with Laster and with Sean?
We, you know, can't party too hard.
Which
I don't
know.
Yes. Yes.
Darn it. This my last.
But there are senior changes in the office. Henry.
I didn't think he would like keep, you know, take me up on that. But
as far as Laster and Sean's characters, what do you think about their relationships? As far as, like, one is basically definitely friendship, and that's been evolving.
Yeah, I love that. I think that was one of my favorite things about the show. So many people have said to me, I can't believe Sean didn't show up. I'm glad he didn't. He had to be there for somebody else, and I feel like because of what my character went through this season, the only person I could really lean on at all was Laster. So I love that moment at the end that we can actually, we can sort of pay that as everything that we've been through and as partners and friends and whatever. And Sean, I feel like they have such a respect for one another. So even when things don't go their way romantically, they have this common respect and love for one another that's always there. And of course, there's that romantic spark as well. So that's always fun. But I think both of those relationships are kind of level this year. And I don't think they're romantic. I mean, everyone's like, real fight. I don't know. They're so tight-lipped about this. That's got to happen.
It can. It has to be on Apple Boxes.
All right.
Thank you. All right, the next show we want to talk about is Justified.
Oh, didn't see it this week.
I'm a couple episodes behind on Justified, but I love this show.
Okay, so really? I'm the only one who's seen this week's episode of Justified. But we didn't really talk about Justified last week or the week before, so that's fine.
What do you think about the episode with, Cameron from Ferris Bueller? Alan,
Oh!
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. He was actually a really smart...
Alan Ruck.
Yeah, he's a really smart kind of villain. Well, he wasn't really a villain.
He wasn't a villain.
He was an antagonist, but
he wasn't a villain.
Right. It was good. I mean, I've liked pretty much all the episodes, and I liked the episode where they introduced his father. Have you seen the one with his father yet?
I started watching that.
His father is an interesting character, just because Raylan really, really hates him.
Who plays him?
You were the guy with names. I'm sorry. I don't know names. You will recognize the actor. How about that? but it's a really interesting relationship between Raylan and his father and his stepmother. Because you get the feeling he has real affection for his stepmother because she took care of him. And he just, especially when his father was in jail. And he just really, really resents his father. And there's this great line at the end that it's not going to reveal too much, but... He basically was just like talking to his dad. He's like, "What kind of disappointment am I that you think that I am this stupid?" You know, and
that the father to the son, or
no, it's the son to the father. It was a really interesting and intense moment. And this week's episode plays on that a little bit. Like, the big cliffhanger deals with him trying to deal with his dad and stuff like that. So I think that, because I mean, I think the first like three or four episodes were all like, "Ooh, have you seen your father yet? Have you seen your father yet?" And he's like, "No, no, no."
You knew they were leading up.
You knew they were leading up to it, and I wasn't. I was not disappointed. Right. The episode with the dad was pretty good, and you get the impression that his father is pretty smart. Which usually, because you know his father's a criminal, so not necessarily are criminals that intelligent, but his father's pretty smart.
I like the fact that Oliphant plays a good guy with a really big dark streak. Because the times he's played a bad guy, like in Die Hard 4 or in the second season of Damages, I'm just like, I expect that from him because of who he is. But here as on Deadwood, he's a good guy.
I was about to say, I've only seen him on Deadwood, so.
He's a good guy, but he's got this big, dark streak. And the fact that they get the title justified from the fact that he shoots people and then has to make the case that it was a justified shooting.
Oh, and that comes up in the episode I just saw. They're starting the whole investigation into his shooting, so that's going to become an issue.
From which one? From the pilot. Pilot.
Okay. Yeah, when he shot that guy in the pilot, apparently they're investigating that, and I have the feeling that they kind of want to make an example of him. So he's going to have to duck and dodge a little bit.
I love the fact that you know that Walton Goggins will be coming back.
Yes, he's in the one that I just saw.
Okay.
So, yes, I like it. What's interesting about his character is that the character is very similar to that in The Shield. So think of The Shield, think of him in The Shield, and just transport him into this show. And he's pretty much the same character. So, not much of a stretch for the actor, but I enjoyed him in The Shield, so it's fine.
That penultimate episode of the series was brilliant.
Not the last one.
The next to last one.
Right, I agree. Let's move on, crank through these. In Plain Sight, I claimed on the title of the podcast we're going to talk about it, and the show has had like three episodes, and we haven't talked about it yet. So I want to get a chance to talk about where Mary is this season and Marshall. What do you think, all Ronnie?
All I want to say is verbally impotent.
Verbally impotent?
That was the best line ever.
Marshall not being able to talk, you know? But, I mean, it's such a great twist because here it is. You know he loves her, you know what I mean? And this whole thing with, you know, the breakup and everything else, and how does he broach that subject, you know, and finally they're in a car and they have to.
Well, I'm going to give a little bit of backstory before we go into the specifics, which is, in Plain Sight, Marshall and Mary are both Marshalls, and
is he like the partner?
He's the partner, okay. And they're best friends. They've known each other really a long time, and because we're in third season, mm-hmm. And in first season, the end of first season, beginning of second season, you start to get the feeling that Marshall has feelings for Mary, and she's clueless. Like, she has no idea. And by the end of second season, you're absolutely sure that Marshall is completely in love with her. But she's been dating this guy for the last two seasons, and then she gets engaged, and they're trying to set a date for the wedding, blah, blah, blah. And he has to be all the cool friend, you know, because he's her best friend. And then last week's episode, she broke up with her fiancé. So that guy's gone now. And this week's episode, he notices she's not wearing a ring. So he notices this a couple of times and doesn't really know if he should mention it. He's unsure, and he's like, he doesn't know what he feels. You can just see everything going on in his eyes, you know. He's happy, but then he can't act like he's happy, you know, because it's his best friend and she broke up with this guy, and so he's trying to be cool about it. So the reference that Ronnie's making is she's really upset and just wants him to distract her with his babble, because normally he'll just start talking about facts or whatever. And he can't talk because emotionally he's really moved and he doesn't really know what to say. And so he just says that he's verbally impotent, which is great.
That's funny.
And that's the thing about the show. I mean, they do drama, but they lean pretty heavily on the comedy too. I mean, they have a lot of good humor, especially between Marshall and Mary. The two of them... Oh, yeah. They're very much like siblings, except that he's absolutely in love with her. And she's still clueless. She has no idea. She sees him as her brother.
Yeah. Well, Mary, I mean, she's emotionally clueless with everybody.
Oh, yeah, this week's episode?
It was awesome at the end.
This week's episode, they were working with like the FBI or whatever, another agency, and what is that man's name?
The actor is Steve Weber. Wait, is it
Steve Weber, Steve, that is correct.
Steven Weber from Wings?
Yes. He was the guest star, and him and Mary had like a lot of problems. They were fighting back and forth, and at the end of the episode, when everything is solved, he asks her out on a date, and he's like, can I call you sometime? And she's like, what for? And her partner's like, he's trying
to.
Yeah, Marshall's like, he's trying to ask you out. And she's like, for what? and he's like, on a date. And he's like, no, he's not. And the guy's like, yes, I am. And she goes, oh, why would you do that? And she seriously is like, she doesn't get it. I mean, it's not that she doesn't understand that she's pretty, because she does. But she does get the fact that she's pretty. But what she doesn't get is she kind of thinks of herself as one of the guys, like, quite literally. And she's beyond independent, and she's emotionally stunted beyond belief. Mm-hmm. And so she really doesn't get relationships, which is why her relationship with her fiancé broke up. And so she's like, yeah, you have bad timing because I just broke up with someone. And he goes, or very good timing. And she's like, no, bad timing. But that was a great scene. I really love the two of them together. Let's crank this on 30 Rock real quick.
30 Rock rocks.
Well, 30 Rock, they had this week's episode is they dealt with...
they had two.
Well, yes, but we're only going to talk about one because you only saw the first one. I like the whole Jack and his juggling his two girlfriends and having no idea which way to go, whether the past or the future. He's got the young girl who adores him, and then he's got an old high school friend that he's been in love with forever. So he's kind of like trying to juggle his super complicated relationship. So I thought that was very entertaining and very funny.
Don't get me wrong. I love Julianne Moore, but I hate her accent.
The accent? That Boston
accent? I hate her
accent
in this. I don't know. I mean, wow. Why they chose to have her do it, especially when it sounds so bad. It's like, come on, seriously? You know, Elizabeth Banks is great. I just thought that 30 Rock is better than to do the old, I've got two dates, I'm juggling them both type plot line. Seems like more something from Happy Days out of the 70s.
Yeah, but I have to say that Jack Donaghy makes it entertaining. Any scenes generally with him, actually, it's Jack Donaghy, Liz Lemon together in any scene, I'm entertained.
Absolutely.
And then they also did the affirmative action with Twofer this week, which was quite funny. Twofer finds out that he got hired through affirmative action. That's why his checks are a different color, which I was like, why would they do that? But what's hilarious, I was like, dude, your name is Twofer. There's a reason why they called you Twofer. And then I also like the fact that they broke down that everyone gets benefits some way or the other through some form of kind of affirmative action, I guess you would say. Like, you know, Liz Lemon realized that she got a scholarship that was only for girls, and everybody else found out they got things for, you know, different reasons and stuff. So that was interesting. They made it funny. It was like political commentary without, you know, hitting you upside the head with it. So, yeah. It was a good episode.
Rock.
Yeah. And 30 Rock does a really good job with that. And I love whenever they look directly at the camera and make a comment about something about the network that the network has done.
I love the show Bitch Hunter. The Will Ferrell show. That's why the girly show got picked up.
Because
the outrage of Bitch Hunter and Will Ferrell has a cameo. And then they gave Created By, and Ben Silverman was one of the executives. He's the guy who just got kicked out of NBC, who made the disastrous, you know, Leno at 10 decision.
Oh, wow. And that's the thing, is their comedy is really timely. And I like, there was one episode where they knew that they were going to air before they knew the results of, like, who won the Olympics or something. And so they literally filmed the episode and overdubbed it with the correct answer.
Oh, I remember that.
That was hilarious. That was just so funny. And they do stuff like that all the time. I watch very few comedies, but 30 Rock, actually...
You need to start watching Modern Family.
I watched the pilot. It was good, but it just didn't make me want to keep watching. I liked it. I did. Back on topic. Which is...
Back on topic.
Fringe.
Loved it. A friend's girlfriend was the girl in the teaser, and she continued later on throughout the episode.
Oh, the one that got shapeshifted?
The one that got shapeshifted, and they find her corpse in the car, and then she shows up. And
she's your one of your friends, or one of your friends?
She's the girlfriend of a Canadian friend.
That's my
friend Troy's girlfriend. Katie Finley is her name, but she's the girlfriend of a buddy of mine who's an actor in Canada.
All right, thank you. Because I was like, he's your stepfather's cousin's roommate.
I am your mother's, father's, sister's, uncle's, nephew's, cousin's, niece, gardener.
Exactly. We were actually, when I was watching Fringe, I was watching it with one of my friends, and we were talking about the fact that whenever anybody is like a body snatched or taken over by an alien or whatever, they do that kind of silly, stiff walk, blank eyes.
The zombie,
yeah. And the girl did the same thing, you know, and so we were actually commenting on that. And then when she got taken over by the bank manager, it was better. There was a little more depth to it. So it's just I think it's a faucet of she's a young actress versus a veteran actor. I think that was pretty much those two things. It's just like the choices, the little choices you make. But the episode itself was mainly about Peter finding out. So this is the big reveal. Peter finds out that he's from the alternate universe, and he figures out that his father stole him. And that is a huge, huge deal. And it ended pretty much the way we expected, which was Peter very angry and yelling and saying, I never want to see you again. And we've been waiting for that for like a season and a half. The only thing that, because I was telling you earlier,
it's only been more like not even a full season.
Yeah, it's not quite a full season, but we've been waiting. And the thing I was trying to tell you earlier is that they said the minister came across mm-hmm. over the bridge, and we know he got over, and the whole point was to bring him over, and I realized who the minister was, because I was watching it, I was like, it's alternate Walter! It's Walternate.
What?
That is my bet. I don't know any spoilers. I know nothing, but
that's crazy.
No, but it's brilliant because you just have Peter find out that the Walter that we know is not his son, and is not his father, and we know that Walternate has been looking for his son all this time. You know that.
Do we know that?
Yeah. Well, there was the episode where Walter was crazy in the insane asylum, and he mm-hmm. saw another Walter. And at first, I thought that was in his head, but you realize it wasn't in his head. And that was the alternate?
Is that from season one?
Yes.
See, I haven't. I watched the pilot, did not care for it.
I agree, I did not care for the pilot. And
Libby has already talked about how she knows that Abram shows self-destruct, or tend to self-destruct after he leaves. So I figured, you know, I didn't care for this, so I'm going to stop watching. And then all my students said, it got better. And I'm like, yeah, sure it did. But then I have a couple friends who run the staff now, so I'm like, I'll watch it, and it's been good.
So you didn't go back and watch season one?
I bought it on Blu-ray. I haven't had a chance to look at them. One of them gave me recommended episodes to look at.
There are, I mean, because the thing is, I watched the pilot, I hated it. And then I watched the second episode, I hated it. And I was like, my friend was like, no, you got to watch It Gets Better. I was like, you need to tell me
It gets better.
I was like, tell me the episode. And then he's like, episode 6. And I was like, all right. So I watched episode 6. I was like, that was pretty good. And so then I watched it pretty much from episode 6 on. And then once I finished season 1, I went back and watched the ones that I skipped. But, yeah, Fringe is one of those tricky shows that the beginning is really slow and you have a problem. There are problems. But, all right.
I think it's great that the ratings have been strong without the benefit of trying to stunt program it with American Idol.
And also
on one of the most competitive nights of television.
On Thursdays. That's not bad. And I like the fact that Fox has confidence in the show, which mm-hmm. is good. The other thing I was going to mention is Leonard Nimoy, who plays a major character in Fringe, just retired from television. So I was like,
well, he said that after he finishes with Belle, he's done.
Well, how does he know when are we going to? Oh, you mean, like, he doesn't know when
he's
going to.
He doesn't know when he's going to be finished with Will.
But he said, oh, okay, because I saw that, and I was like, what does that mean for Fringe?
I mean, they left the, yeah. I mean, he left the door open, but basically said that this character is.
Is, okay. Okay, well, that's fine.
But Gene Hackman's retired a couple times over the years, too, so.
Well, but Leonard Nimoy is kind of up there.
Getting up there, yeah.
Yeah. And don't forget this week on Fringe is the musical Fairy Tale episode.
Oh, right, the upcoming one where they're doing all the musicals.
Nothing to distract you like one of your leads taking off for points unknown, like a musical episode.
Yeah, because it's like, that's the thing that's kind of weird, is it was very dramatic and very dark at the end of this last episode, and then next week we're going to be singing. I'm like,
I bet you we're going to be in Walter's head or something.
I think that's what they said, it's going to be in Walter's head, but I think that's the only way you can explain everybody singing and dancing.
Is there a
Go ahead, Ronnie.
Actually, I think I was going to say with Olivia, because it's her escape, is to, you know, go into this fairy tale. So it's sort of like, it's her more than Walter, I think.
Oh, it looks like she's telling a story to her niece or something.
I thought he was telling the story.
Or somebody's telling a story to
her niece. I thought it was Walter telling a story to a little girl.
I think it's her niece.
Oh.
Because I think I've seen her before.
Okay.
Is there a point in season one where Walter becomes less crazy?
Yes.
Okay. Because it seems to me... It seems to me that one of the things that's messed him up is his little jaunts into the other world.
Well, actually, that's not true. I don't know if that's a split. They actually explain it.
In season one?
I don't remember if it's in season... I watched season one and season two kind of close together.
Okay.
They spliced out a piece of his brain.
Oh, that's right. I saw that.
Okay, there you go. That's why he got insane. All right. Clicking over. Next. Supernatural. Slit your wrists right now. Supernatural is like, it's one of the best, like, these last two seasons, season four and five, are the best seasons they've had ever, and the story is really compelling, but I swear the darkness will, like, swallow you up. But it's, I can't stop watching it or anything. I mean, it's really, really good.
When you start the show with the pilot of Mom's body burning on top of the ceiling... I mean, seriously, my best friend and his wife watched the pilot, and they're like, not for us. It's too scary. I mean...
Well, it's not even that it's scary right now. Like, right now, it's just really dark. It's just super, super dark right now. Are you watching the show?
Yeah, I haven't watched this week's yet.
Oh.
I'm one behind. Go ahead and spoil that, I don't mind.
Oh, okay. Because I was like...
I will be watching no matter what. The 100th episode was interesting. It wasn't exactly what I thought it was.
Which one was the 100th?
Last week, with the return of Adam.
Oh, I really liked Adam coming back.
Yes.
When was the last time we saw him?
Oh, when he got killed. He's only been on the show once.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
What season was that? Was that 3 or...?
That was season 4.
It was last year.
Yeah, it was Jump the Shark. I actually remember
that. Oh, that's right.
Because it's like, oh, we have a mysterious third brother.
They're taking it on for another season where this was originally supposed to be the end, you know?
Yeah, I'm kind of scared.
Or which way they're going to go.
The thing that's interesting is that... I can't think of his name. The creator of the show. Kripke's leaving after this season.
He's not leaving.
Well, no. He's relinquishing the showrunning duties to one of his, you know, subordinates. But the problem is, that's basically what J.J. Abrams has done on his shows.
Right. So, but he's also going to still write. Kripke is still writing.
Oh, he is going to still write?
He's going to still write episodes.
I'll still watch next year.
Well, I will say my deal breaker is if... Jensen Ackles leaves, I'm out.
I think the boys are signed for 7 years, so I don't think they're going anywhere.
I thought they were only signed for 5 originally.
Usually, series deals are done 5 with the network option for 2 more years. 5 plus 2. That's how they bounce Shannon Doherty from 90210 after season 5. We're not firing you. We're not picking up your option. Ba-chunk.
Well, I figured that bringing Adam in was like a guarantee that if any of the boys decided they wanted to negotiate, they're like, we got an extra brother.
No.
I think it was more like, plot device.
Adam can't be the vessel, you know what I mean? He can't take over one of them. The show's around the two of them. They got to keep the both.
Yeah, I do, but
This ain't Charmed.
Somebody else said.
We have another witch. Ooh, there's another sister.
Yeah, but I think adding Adam would really work. I really like him. But this week's episode, the interesting concept was they brought in all the other gods. They were like, what do the other gods think of the angels and Lucifer?
You mean from the other mythologies?
From mythology and from other religions.
Oh, interesting. So it's very Sandman-y?
I did not finish Sandman. I started it. I did not finish it. But it's basically they bring in Buddhists, and they bring in Odin, and they bring in Baldur.
Baldur the Brave.
Baldur. And Mercury and some other different gods.
Interesting.
And I thought that the concept was really interesting. I was like, oh, yeah, what are they thinking about the destruction of the world and the apocalypse? So I liked the thought of bringing them in. I did not like the execution.
Interesting.
My problem with the execution is they made them all weak.
Yes.
And, like, Lucifer, who is technically just an archangel, just rolled through him.
Huh.
I mean, he just... Whoosh, It was actually pathetic how quickly he killed them all. And we have the return of the Archangel Gabriel, who is Loki. Because the other gods think that he's just Loki, and they don't know that he's an Archangel. And so,
oh, the trickster?
The trickster, right.
Yes.
I loved that reveal, by the way.
That was good.
That was brilliant. That was brilliant.
We're cutting you off, Ronnie. Please speak.
Oh no, that's right. Go ahead.
No, we just,
the thought's gone.
So the reveal that Loki is actually
Archangel Gabriel, right? And he has a good. I'm gonna not spoil everything that happens, but he had a good role this week. I mean, he actually got to do some meaty stuff this week.
Cool.
Definitely.
I was afraid.
Oh, and your girl Tori from Battlestar is the Indian. You remember
Vishnu?
Tori?
Yeah, Rekha Sharma.
She is the destroyer.
Kali,
the destroyer.
Kali.
So
she's tiny. She's very diminutive. No, seriously, I sat two across from her at a screening of the finale last year, and I thought it was her, and then she's really
short.
Vertically challenged. But she's gorgeous. She's much prettier.
She's a great god though. She did a good job.
She's much prettier than they ever had her made up as Tori. Because they had to make her up look kind of harsh.
Well, in this, they make her up to make her look really pretty, but they also, she's hardcore. She's like the destroyer, and you understand why she has that name. She's not playing around. So,
right.
I thought she did a good job in this week's episode. All right, crank it on. Stargate Universe. Wait, let's talk about the episode, and then you can give your rants. Because I hear a rant, I feel a rant coming.
Uh-oh.
What did you think, Ronnie?
I enjoyed the episode a lot. You know, I mean, to have one with Rush, you know, in this whole dream sequence. You know what I mean? But the weird thing is that then he has to go find the number 46, you know what I mean, and realize it's 23. I've never heard that before for this, you know, the sequence that he needs to be able to unlock the control.
Well, it's not that the number's 23. It's the fact the 46 was the hint that he needs to look at DNA. So
okay.
He has to cycle through the different pieces of DNA to find the correct... key, and once he finds the key, then he can unlock the ancient technology. So that's the deal. But the good thing about the episode, and which I actually thought was really interesting and torturous, was he basically had to relive his wife's death because she dies really slowly of cancer, and he's already done this, but they're making him literally relive every day that once he finds out. Huh?
I was going to say, it's not day. He made himself relive that day.
No, he didn't pick that. That was not what he picked. That was his.
That was the computer
giving him the information, because actually Daniel Jackson was kind of the computer leading him to where he needed to go, but he did not.
Because remember his wife when she was there like on her deathbed, you know, and she was talking, you know, that you picked, you know, of all the memories you picked this one.
Well, I don't think he consciously picked it. I really don't think
subconsciously.
Right, but it's still torturous that your subconscious is basically, because he was working on the Stargate, he wasn't there when his wife finally died of cancer. And so that guilt has eaten at him. And so when he has to go back into his memories, it chooses that instead of him going off to work on the Stargate, he stays at home and he's there for his wife's death. But the problem is he can't stand it. Like, so he ignores her. He basically spends all his time working, and he stays as far away from her as possible because that memory is just so painful. And I thought that was a really good view into Rush's head, and I like the thing she said to him at the end. She's like, why have you become such a mean person and all of this?
Right.
And that was some really good character development and insight. I don't think I really care about the guys who got stuck on the planet because, you know, we know they're going to get found. There's no... Like, at the beginning of the show, there was actually danger. Like, you didn't know if they were going to kill people. But at this point, I kind of feel like, well, they're not going to kill any of those guys.
Gee, what are the odds of them getting found in
the next week's episode, yeah. So, there's no real danger. That's the one thing that I'm really disappointed in. the Stargate universe has not set it up to where you're afraid they'll legitimately kill someone.
Is it time for my rant now?
All right, go for it.
Here's my problem with Stargate universe. It's trying so desperately hard to be grim and gritty and corrupting a premise that people liked Stargate because it was fun and adventurous. And then when Stargate spun off itself, we got Stargate Atlantis, which is basically Deep Space Nine. And when they decided to do another spinoff, we get Universe, which is basically Voyager.
I knew you were going to say that.
And Voyager had a great pilot, and then the problem with Voyager is they always had to hit the reset button at every episode.
Right, well, they're not hitting the reset button on this show.
Let me finish. Here's the problem. I don't like the construction of the way they set it up. They've got this artificial divide between there's the civilian crew and then there's the military and we're trapped in space in the ancient ship and we don't like each other, blah, 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 blah. If you're going to do a coup, I want to see that coup. And you know you have a full season pickup. Let's do a systematic coup and build an arc to it. I mean, this is a problem with Battlestar Galactica 4.5. Is the mutiny arc
happened too quickly.
And Richard Hatch and I have talked about it. Galactica Season 4 really felt like they had enough story to stretch it into 5.0. And they didn't because they didn't have that many episodes picked up. With Stargate Universe, they do have the episodes, and I don't believe the choices they make. I know...
Well, that mutiny happened so fast, because like when they decided to have the mutiny, I was like, oh, that'll be interesting. And then the mutiny happened the next week, I was like, whoa...
On BSG?
No, on Universe. Oh, on Stargate Universe. Well, it was like, Rush is talking to the woman, and they're like, let's plan a mutiny, let's do something. And then the very next week, the mutiny happens. There's no way they planned that quickly.
The fact that it took them a 3-hour pilot should have been a warning sign to everybody. If you can't set up your premise in 1 2-hour movie, that's a problem. And nothing that happened in season 1.0 convinced me, ooh, this is an amazing show. I thought it was... Now, when Young strands...
Rush
on the planet...
That was fantastic.
I thought that was interesting. Yes. However, after waiting how many ever months, or basically for Caprica 1.0 to finish to come back, for them to just happen to find... You know, they encounter an alien spaceship... That just happens to have the crew member be stranded. I call shenanigans on that.
That's valid.
That's shenanigans. And what they've done.
I like the fact that you call shenanigans. I thought I was the only one who did that.
No, you were. Pretty good. You couldn't be. I mean, if you look at the ratings for the show, trust me, we're not the only ones calling shenanigans. So, I don't know how you can save this show. I mean, yes, you have a second season pickup.
You have to kill somebody. That's my thing. You have to make me believe that you are serious, that this is a serious show.
Because it's Star Trek syndrome where, you know, will Jadzia Dax leave Deep Space Nine forever for her mystical lover who lives in another dimension? Well, the answer is no. The only reason we knew she was going to die at the end of season 6 is because we knew that she didn't renew her contract and was doing the Becker pilot. But there's so much false stakes on Universe. It's like, oh, come on. Seriously?
Yeah.
Seriously? And I like the cast.
I do.
I really like Young. I've liked
Go ahead, Ronnie.
Oh, no, that's okay. Are you done with the rant now? No.
Yes, go. I was saying I really like Young. Go.
Yes, and I was going to say, I like Young, too. And I think I like it because of the characters. Like you said, there's a lot of the story elements that you do have to let go. But there's something very compelling to me, especially between Young and Rush. And, you know, in this duel. You know, I mean, and now that we know that Rush, you know, is going to change because of the revelations that he had with his last episode, I watch it for, like, the character study more than the overall arc. Because, yeah, when you look at the overall story, it's a mess. But when you look at the characters, I really enjoy that aspect of it.
Well, I agree with you. I like the character stuff, but... and I'm watching it for Rush and Young right now. I mean, those are the two characters that have really grabbed me. And even though I feel like they did the cheap pregnancy thing, I was like, is this a soap opera now? But I actually...
space opera, baby.
But I actually am excited that I really want Young to find out that TJ is pregnant. I am just totally like... I totally want to find that out. But... I want the stakes to be higher. I want to believe that they will kill someone. I want to believe. They don't even have to kill a main character, dude. Just kill one of the side scientists that we've seen a bunch of times.
Kill one of those scientists who had his...
You know what I'm saying? There's like a bunch of the side people that we've seen a lot of times, and I like them, but kill one.
I think the person they've killed since the pilot with the most impact was Chloe's dad. His self-sacrifice in the pilot meant something, and I'm surprised that Chloe hasn't needed more comfort from her lieutenant boyfriend. I'm missing my dad. It was his birthday anniversary,
yes.
You know, bat mitzvah, whatever.
Yeah, but, you know, the boyfriend is no more after the whole mutiny.
Oh, she was on the wrong side of it. Hello.
All right, the next show we have is the second episode of Doctor Who, which was The Beast Below. Comments.
A, I like Matt Smith as the new Doctor. B,
I agree.
I like the new companion. She's...
Where does she rank in companions?
Well, she's no Martha Jones, that's for sure.
That's what I'm talking about.
She's no Martha Jones. But I think this episode tried to show that she's not just a pretty face.
Right, right.
And what's the name of the actress who plays her?
Karen Gillian.
No, but I think she'll, you know, come into her own in coming weeks. Matt Smith is interesting. He's not classically handsome.
Not at all.
He's really kind of odd looking, but he's very doctory looking.
Yeah, I have to say, I was, because somebody was talking about, you know, attractive doctors and whatnot. And I mean, David Tennant's my doctor from the hotness standpoint and acting standpoint. But this guy, he's got something about him. He's got like this presence that you just want to keep watching him. I don't necessarily think he's attractive, but I totally want to keep watching what he's doing.
He's interesting looking.
Yes.
And Ronnie? His charisma just stands out and pulls you in. Like you said, but when you look, it's like, well, why? What is it about him? And you don't know, but he still draws you in.
I've read interviews where they basically said during casting, they're like, that's him. This is the guy. I was really pulling for a black doctor personally, but... Just it would have been nice to shake it up a little bit because one of the top contenders was a pretty well known African British actor.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I like that guy.
But Matt Smith is fine, and my concern is Daleks again. Seriously, enough with the Daleks. Please.
That's next week.
Oh,
you're talking about the preview.
I'm just talking
week?
About the preview. It's like seriously, don't. They're like the go-to. They're going to become the Borg of Doctor Who if they don't watch it.
Well, the thing is from our standpoint, from watching the new Who, it seems like it's the new Doctor Who is from 2005 on, and it's as new viewers, we're totally tired of the Daleks, and I am on board with being absolutely tired of the Daleks. But the people who've been watching the show since like the 60s. They're like, that's part of the show.
Of course it's the Daleks.
Right. And so they're like, well, the Daleks have to be part of the show. I disagree. I am all about let's find some new enemies.
Mm-hmm.
The Doctor does... I feel like everything you could have done with the Daleks has been done.
And then some.
And there's nothing new to add to the Daleks. But for some reason, those crazy Brits, they like their Daleks. And... And I saw another preview. It has freaking Cybermen.
See, now I am excited that the Weeping Angels are coming back.
Oh, yes.
But it's been a couple of seasons.
And Weeping Angels, also new. They were new villains, and there's plenty to do with them. Because we learned about them, not even really from the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be really interesting to see the Doctor face the Weeping Angels really kind of for the first time. And the preview I saw for that is we also have River Song. She's in that same episode.
Yes.
I love Misa River Song.
Alex Kingston.
Well, back up. We didn't talk about the episode.
we skipped the episode. You know, the episode itself I thought was kind of standard fare. I mean, we've seen the remnants of the British Empire floating in space and all is not what it seems before in Doctor Who.
I don't...
Just in the last 5 years, we've seen.
Well, it felt like a little bit like the season one episode where the Doctor takes Rose to the end of the universe.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it feels a little like that.
With a little Satan pit thrown in.
Yeah, it does feel like a little bit of recycling. But I didn't mind it because I thought that the Queen, Liz the 10th, was pretty entertaining, and the stuff with the kids.
Sophie Elcanedo, hello.
I mean, she was great.
In Britain, she's huge.
Well, I'm not in Britain, so I did not know that. But I do know that I thought she did a really good job, and even with cheesy lines, she made them work. She's like, she goes like, basically, I rule. And I was like, oh, that could have been so...
I love that.
That could have been so bad, but her delivery of that line was really good. Also, the kid, from a children's standpoint, it was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. Like, if I had been a 10-year-old child, I would have been crying by the end of that episode.
But that's great. That's vintage humor.
Oh, I know. And it's brilliant. And that's what I'm saying. There were good points to it. My only problem with this episode was the doctor's rant at the end where he starts yelling at Amy.
Against humans.
Against humans. And he's so... But, I mean, part of the doctor is that he's arrogant. But I didn't like the fact that he's the one that sent Amy off on her own. She had never been anywhere. He sends her off 5 minutes after they get there. She does, you know, what she wants to do based on her inclinations. And then he gets angry about it and says, I'm sending you home.
But the thing is, The doctor's always been kind of like, you know, and he's always had this relationship where he's superior to these silly little
the
humans.
Apes, yes. He has. But it's not even the comment about, you know, when he says, if you're human, don't speak to me right now. That's not even my issue. My issue is the fact that he very deliberately sent her out on her own, didn't agree with her decision, and says, okay, I'm sending you home. And it felt very petty to me, and
he gets his comeuppance, though.
Well, maybe she outdoes him, but that's fine.
And he doesn't apologize.
No, he doesn't, because the doctor never apologizes.
He would never apologize.
Yeah, the doctor never apologizes.
Rather than saying, I'm wrong, he reverses his decision and allows her to continue to voyage with him. So I thought that was kind of an interesting way to show this is the doctor, because he's got the positive
but the,
and negative
but
traits.
My problem is normally when the doctor does, when he does a superiority thing, you know he's going to do it, so you're like, whatever. But I've never really disliked the doctor before. And when he tells Amy that she's going to, you know, he's making her go home after she made a decision, after he told her to make the decision, I was like, you know what? I would have been, you know the difference? Martha Jones would have been like, fine. Send me home.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's the difference. That's the difference.
This is Amy's first adventure, too.
Yeah, this is her first road. Even
in Martha's early adventures, Martha was like, I'm not just going to be a guest. Either invite me to go or don't. Don't do this wishy-washy crap. You know, she basically stood up for herself, and I feel like I want... I want Amy to do the same thing, and she did sort of try to stand up for herself.
But she's in such a different place. I mean, she knew him as a little girl. I mean, he was her imaginary friend.
True.
You know what I mean? And so she's coming from a very different emotional
place. I'm not actually mad at her. I'm mad at him, actually. It's like, he actually made me very angry at him in this episode.
But I think you're supposed to be.
I've never been angry at the doctor before.
I think Moffat's a good enough writer to let you know that was very intentional the arrogance.
Well, the arrogance is always there. He's always arrogant. I don't mind the arrogance. That's part of the doctor. And part of the thing is you see the arrogance and you find it fun and entertaining. And you cheer for the doctor.
This was not fun arrogance.
Oh, no, not at all. I was like, what a jerk. But I mean, the doctor's always a jerk. But I don't usually dislike him for being a jerk.
What I think is really interesting is the fact that if you look at the... You know, since they did I'll call it a reboot, but since the Ninth Doctor, if you look at the companions we've had, Rose was clearly in love with him.
Right.
Martha was more on an equal footing, but was still in love with him. And then you get, as much as I didn't like her at the beginning, Donna Noble was a brilliant companion. She's not as pretty as the others, but she's not in love with him.
Yes, it was great.
And Amy is a new twist because of the whole childhood thing, they have a completely different relationship. She's still kind of, wait a minute, I wasn't imagining things.
But I think she's in love with him too.
I think she is in love with him, but it's
a different type.
It's a different type, and she also has like this huge grudge that you've made me a laughing stock. You know, my first, 18 plus years were wasted because of what you did to me. because you didn't come back when you said you were going to, and you can say, oh, I mean, I hope there's an episode coming out where she, you know, lets him have it and just says, you know, you ruined my life.
Oh, he totally did. I think the fact that he pre-ruined a companion's life versus waiting until, you know, he's traveled with them for a couple of years, which is the normal
which
process.
Which is the normal process.
Right. He ruined her life before they started traveling together. I think that's fantastic. All right.
Now, has there been an explanation why she changed and called her name to Amy rather than Amelia?
Well, I mean, it's the difference between, you know, her,
growing up,
you know, people change their names from, you know, I think Bill Adama used to be Willie when he was a kid, and then he changed his name to Bill. I mean, it's just people grow up, and they try to find their identity, and part of it is their name. So,
all right. I never did, but okay.
Well, you got about a couple minutes to talk about Legend of the Seeker. Go. All
right. No, this week was a very interesting episode because we go back and get some more of the backstory because of Panis Rahl. And him coming into the episode.
That was actually very good. Good casting for Panis Rahl, too.
Oh, definitely. And so I really enjoyed this one. And the interesting thing is, at the end, we can do spoilers, right?
Go for it.
About the episode?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we found out that Zed was actually the one who allowed him to impregnate his wife, or else we wouldn't have had Darkin Rahl if it wasn't for Zed.
Right.
And that was a big reveal, yes.
Yeah, so that tells you why Zed's got all that guilt. Because he feels like everybody who's died at the hand of Darkin Rahl is his fault. Because without him, Darkin Rahl would have never been born.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I always got the impression that Panis Rahl was evil. And I like the fact that this episode really gets you to see that Darkin Rahl is very evil. But Panis Rahl, some power corrupted him a little bit. But he realized it and really tried to redeem himself and do the right thing. And he very specifically wanted to have another son because the prophecy said that his second son would kill his first son. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I really did like Panis Rahl. I like that reveal. And even though I find Zed's brother to be slightly annoying, I like the fact that it was all family, too, because the brother shows up with Zed and they're like, oh, we got to do this family thing. And Richard's like, dude, I'm family. What are you talking about? So everybody's related and everybody, you know, all that all works really well. I do still think that the weakness of Legend of the Seeker is, the guy who plays Richard has a very limited range. He can do exactly what he's supposed to do for the role, but I feel like if they gave him something really meaty and really dramatic, I'm not sure if he could do it.
So you're saying he has the range from A to B?
A to B, he can do the action hero. He's fine. Like, you give him action hero stuff to do, he's totally cool. You give him a little comedy, he can do a little comedy. You give him something really dramatic, and I'm like, I don't know if I buy your tears, you know? So, and they've done a couple episodes that have been very dramatic. And all the other actors are really good. Like, the guy playing Zed and the woman playing Caitlin, and especially, I just blanked, Kara. The woman playing Kara, I think, is actually the strongest. She is fantastic.
Yes.
So everybody else is really good. I feel like they picked him because he has abs of steel and he's pretty. And he can do action. He can do sword fights. He can do all that stuff. I mean, he's great
at
that.
And this bothers you because...
Well, I mean, I just want, you know, you want your show to have a lead who can do everything. And he can do exactly what they've given him. Like, you don't really feel a weakness for what they've given him, except for every couple of episodes, like, say, maybe a couple of episodes of the season, they'll do something really, really dramatic. And when they do that, he's kind of the thing that's holding everybody else back.
Right.
You know,
and he's the center. He's the seeker. And he isn't quite able to bring everybody together. Everybody else around him are doing these amazing things, and he doesn't do it.
Interesting. Right. It's just like some people were complaining that Amy was picked because she's hot. Because was she a model?
She was a model.
She was a model. It's like, duh. That's
but my thing is, I actually think she's a weak actress. I don't think she's anywhere near as strong as Matt Smith. Matt Smith is a strong actor. I don't think, because the thing she does with her eyes, like this episode we just watched with the Beast Below, she kept doing these little things where her eyes kept getting bigger. Like she'd like find something out and her eyes get really big, and then she'd think about something and her eyes get really big again. I'm like, that's not the only acting trick in your book. Come on.
I would tend to blame the director more than the actor, especially a younger, more inexperienced actor. You need the director needs to, you know, direct her and hold her hand.
And she did it in the pilot, and she did it in the second episode, and she's not as... I think all the other companions have been much stronger actors.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
And so I just... She's like... She is the weak link holding back Matt Smith, because Matt Smith, I think, is... I'm really impressed with his acting.
It will be really interesting once we, you know, to see him play off of Alex Kingston in a couple of weeks.
Right, right, right. Because I think he needs, because right now he's playing off of her and she's mediocre at best. I mean, I like what they're doing with the character, but I just wish she was stronger.
I think some of it, I mean, one of the keys, I direct stage a little bit at my university. One of the keys is stronger actors can help train and bring a younger actor up. So, I would hazard a guess that, you know, in a year when we're talking about the next series of Doctor Who, she'll be better. And
yeah,
she'll probably be a lot better in the last episode of the current season versus the beginning.
But why hire an actress who's not any good? I mean, even though she's...
Because she has the spark. And sometimes you hire people... It's kind of like, why do you date somebody? And everybody else is like, why are you dating them? and the answer, and this goes for men and women alike, is I see what they can become. And I think that sometimes that happens a lot.
Well, we have... I'm not going to disagree with you on that. But we have gotten to the end of our time here. So we're going to close out this podcast. And I just want to remind you all that if you have any feedback, you can... Hit us up at tvcampfire@gmail.com and let us know what you think. See you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.